and how I can get into their scholarship group, but I decide that girl doesn't need to know that. I can look it up online later. A tall girl with flowing hair and a pink blazer walks over to the seat that should have been mine and sits down. I look around at the first few rows and notice that everyone's already teamed up. They're talking to each other and laughing, and I wish that I had brought one of my sisters with me. But still, I grab a seat near the back and stay focused. I didn't come here to make friends. The first part of the session begins. I listen to every word those Howard students say about the different majors and clubs and activities the school has to offer. I hear about their newspaper, The Hilltop, and their literary journal, Amistad. I'm at the edge of my seat, and my heart feels like it's about to leap out of my chest from excitement. If only I could skip my senior year at Bushwick and move in, like, next week. Sage joins the students on the stage to take questions from the audience. "Now keep your questions to just questions," she says into the mic. "No comments or reciting your application essay." The audience laughs, but I don't. I'd be the one to recite my essay as a spoken word piece if it would increase my chances of getting in. I keep raising my hand, but Sage doesn't call on me. So I stand up and raise my hand high. I hear whispers around me, but I don't care. "Yes," Sage says, finally noticing me, "with the afro." A girl standing in the aisle with a mic passes it over to me. As soon as I take it, my stomach sinks, but I swallow back my fear. "Hi," I say, clearing my throat. "How can I get a scholarship to Howard?" Everybody shifts in their seat, and some even giggle. My voice echoes and my whole body goes warm. Still, I hold my head high and wait for an answer as the girl takes the mic away. "Howard University reviews applications on a case-by-case basis. You can ask your guidance counselor for help. We look forward to hearing from you," one of the students on the stage responds. It's an answer I already knew, but I sit back down and tell myself that I won't stop asking questions until I get in. I don't care how I look. When Professor Bello begins her lecture, I take out my notebook to write down everything she says. Her words fill my ears, the students fill my eyes, and I have the overwhelming sense that I belong here. I imagine myself in this place, getting dressed for class, walking with my new friends to the dining hall, joining the poetry club. I sigh big and feel my body swell with hope about this new beginning. The professor keeps talking, and I keep dreaming, and I begin to write a letter to the founder. "Dear Mr. Oliver Otis Howard, I wonder if when we name places after important people, we've made them immortal in some way, that their ghosts can linger in corners and halls and dusty dorm rooms to see me writing this letter to some dead white man who probably could have never imagined that I'd exist. Have you heard of the Dominican Republic, Mr. Howard? Or maybe you've heard about a slave revolt that happened in a country called Haiti? These are the places that made the people that made me. Those are the places that, in 1867, girls like me would not dream of being in somewhere like your university. And this is why I want to come to your school, Mr. Howard. There is more to learn about my old, old self, and black and brown girls like me from hoods all over this country want to take over the world. But there's something missing in our history books the public schools give us. At least that's what my papi said, so he makes me read a lot. And that's where I found out about the Mecca in this book called Between the World and Me. And I'm thinking that I need to come here so I can gather these wisdoms found in old dusty books written by wrinkled brown hands and gather them within the folds of my wide skirt, tuck them into the pockets of my jeans, and take them with me back home to sprinkle all over Bushwick like rain showers, Mr. Howard. Sincerely, ZZ. 15. "Hi, I'm Sonia," a girl says as she reaches for my hand to shake. We walk up the auditorium stairs and into the hallway. I see that she's about my height and my age. "Thank you for that question. Just about everybody up in here is trying to get a scholarship." "Really? Oh," I say. "I'm Zuri, by the way." We head out into the yard. "Yes, really. You know how many people get in and can't pay? Some can't even finish," Sonia says. "I hope that doesn't happen to me," I say. Fear settles in my belly like one of Mama's heavy meals. "Well, You just gotta play your cards right. Get them grades up, and extracurricular activities are your ticket. Where you from, anyway? When she says this, I immediately think of my poems. I hope that's something that'll set me apart. I'm willing to use any skills I have to get into the school of my dreams. Bushwick, I say. I rep hard for my hood wherever I go. Sonia scrunches up her face. It's in Brooklyn, I add. Oh, why didn't you just say Brooklyn? 'Cause Brooklyn is not Bushwick, is all I say. Oh, that's really cool. If you're from Brooklyn, then you probably like Professor Bellow's lecture. What's that supposed to mean? I thought people from Brooklyn are extra woke or whatever. And besides, Professor Bellow is from Brooklyn, or that's what I read in her bio. Bed-Stuy, do or die, or something like that. Really? I feel my whole soul light up when she says this. Yeah, really. You should really try to get to know her. She runs an open mic at Busboys and Poets. We were walking toward the exit of the campus, but I stopped dead in my tracks. What did you just say? An open mic at Busboys and Poets? It's a bookstore that's really close to here, if you want to check it out. How do you know all this? I ask. The Brooklyn in me is not ready to trust this girl all the way. I'm from D.C., so I know all about Howard. Thanks, Sonia, I say with a genuine smile. If she's from around here, then she must be keeping it real with me. Nice meeting you, Zuri, she says. Maybe I'll see you back here for freshman orientation. I smile. I hope so. We wave goodbye to each other, and suddenly a giant bubble of hope begins to well up inside me. I might just have a chance at this school. Busboys and Poets, I say out loud and start to make my way off campus. I have just enough time to head over there before I need to catch my bus back to New York. I walk out onto Georgia Avenue and take in the scenery, the shinier than usual cars, the well-dressed people, the wide, clean buildings. This part of D.C. is kind of like Brooklyn, but not Bushwick or Bed-Stuy, where everything looks old, used, and tired. Here, it looks as if people care, as if they're always expecting company, so everything has to look presentable for strangers. I use my phone to find Busboys and Poets, and I step inside knowing that writers and poets come here to get their words right, to think big thoughts about the world, and to have deep talks like the ones Bobby and his homies have on the stoop. I'm drawn to the nonfiction shelf, where I tried to find the thickest book of them all, no matter what it's about. It's a big book of art, so I hold it close to my chest, put my bag down, crouch down on the step stool near the corner, and get lost in its pages. Mama texts me, and I send her a photo of the bookstore so she knows I'm safe and in a place I love. Layla sends me a silly meme, and I text her back a smiley face. I see that Warren has finally responded to my text with a photo of him hanging out on my block, and I smile. Charlize sends me a pic of her and Colin, but I roll my eyes and ignore it. I pull out three more books. One of them is a poetry collection by Langston Hughes, and I read in his bio that this place is named for him because he was a busboy and a poet. I swim in his words until a voice talks over a microphone somewhere in another part of the restaurant. Good afternoon, and welcome to Busboys and Poets, he says. A few voices cheer. My belly twists and my heart races, because time has slipped from me. I dig into my bag for my phone and see that it's 5 o'clock already. My bus leaves at 7. I'll need to get to the station in an hour, but I still have time to see what all this noise is about. I follow the voice that says he'll be inviting poets up to the stage in just a few minutes and advises anyone who wants to sign up to do so now, before they close the list. My belly knots again, because his words are a command. There's no one here who knows me. There's no one from the hood who will spread a rumor about me getting on the mic to spit some corny rhyme about love or the hood or my sisters. The last time I shared my poems in public was for the after-school performance in June, and even that was only for the kids who had taken that poetry class. Thank you all for coming out, the man continues. We'll be featuring some local teen poets who are part of the Poetry Out Loud summer workshops, so give them a round of applause, y'all. I walk to a separate part of the bookstore, where there's a restaurant, a small stage, and a black man wearing a bow tie. I only stand there and watch the people. It's mostly teens, all right. And I almost think of backing out. Strangers or not, and whether it's D.C. or Bushwick, I know kids my age can be brutal. Still, I'm drawn to the mic. But first, let's get some of you young people to bless this mic, the man says. There's a girl standing by the stage holding a clipboard. There's a short line, about 5 teenagers who walk up to her and sign up for the open mic. So I'm the 6th. Some people stare at me. I stare back. Others glance. I ignore them. I write ZZ on a line, and I take a seat in a corner in the back of the room. A waitress comes to take my order. I have $14 left after I paid to get to the Howard campus, so I just ask for water. Those few minutes before my name gets called go by like honey dripping from a spoon. And after each poet goes up, who are all just okay, the man finally calls my name. My heart doesn't race. My palms are not sweaty. I'm as cool as a snow cone. The clapping is what gets me up from off my seat and adds the rhythm to my slow walk toward the small stage, up the short flight of steps behind the microphone and into the limelight. I begin to speak. Girls in the hood. Step onto my block and walk these jagged broken streets and sidewalk cracks like rickety bridges across our backs to the end of rainbows reflecting off broken glass where the pot of gold is way on the other side of this world. So we hood girls shout our pain into the megaphone wind, hoping it will carry our dreams to skyscraping rooftops with radio towers, broadcasting our tongue clicking, smack talking, neck rolling, hip swaying, fingers snapping sass through telephone wire, jump ropes while we skip to the beat of our own songs and count out the seconds, minutes, hours, days, until we break past these invisible walls where glass ceilings are so high. We only look up and never scratch the surface with airbrushed and gel-tipped manicured nails, hoping that maybe the stars will reach down instead and want to touch us too. My pulse races, and I can hear everyone start clapping. I can feel that my words have earned me respect. Just like when Papi sits with his homies on the stoop to predict a politician's next move, theorize some foreign country strategy, or know who's about to have beef with who on the block weeks before something goes down. He drops knowledge just as he's slapping down a set of cards or a domino onto a table, and his homies can't do anything but bow down to his greatness and keep their mouths shut. And I'm sure that's what everybody does as they applaud and cheer. That's when I know that this place can be an extension of my block too, like home. I let myself get showered with applause and cheers before I open my eyes again. And when I do, they land on a familiar face. That's when my stomach sinks, my breath quickens, and I'm frozen there on the stage, even as the audience stops applauding and the man calls for the next poet to come up. Darius Darcy is looking directly at me. 16. The words, "What the hell is he doing here?" play over and over in my mind. He's just standing there in the back of the room with his hands in his tight pant pockets. The late afternoon sunlight shines on the side of his face, making him almost glow. We both have lights shining down on us as if we're the only ones in here. Someone comes over to touch my arm, and I finally look away and step down from the stage. I almost don't know where to go, but then I remember I left my bag on the chair, and I have to head over to where Darius is standing. I recognize one of the girls he's with, Carrie. This is not how I expected my afternoon to go, at all. And Darius just watched me perform? Oh, hell no. "Small world, huh?" is the first thing Darius says. "Too small," I say as I grab my bag without looking directly at him. "Way too small." "So small, I'm starting to feel claustrophobic," Carrie says while shifting in her seat. There's an empty chair at their table that has Darius's bag hanging over the back, but I don't sit down. "Wow, you all know each other?" the other girl asks. She looks familiar too, but I don't think I've ever seen her. Then I realize that she has the same square jawline as Darius. "Hi, I'm Georgia, and that poem was really good. Girls in the Hood, I like that." "Zuri" is all I say, pretending to be uninterested, because she really looks like Darius. And I remember her name from when we were talking about that band at Maria Hernandez Park. She must be his little sister, the third Darcy kid. Then Darius adds, "And guess what? Zuri lives across the street from us back in Bushwick." Georgia gasps, "Oh my God, wow, what a coincidence. What are you doing in D.C.? You go to Howard?" She sounds like her brothers, Not her voice, but her words. No New York twang, no slang, nothing. She pronounces her words perfectly. She enunciates. No, I don't go to Howard yet. I'm a senior at Bushwick High. I'm just touring the campus for the day. Cool, she says. Carrie doesn't say a word to me. She just smiles a fake smile and messes with her iced latte or whatever she's drinking. Another teen poet gets on the mic and yells so loud that I want to cover my ears. You're the last person I expected to run into here. Darius bends down a bit so that I can hear him. This is the first time I'm seeing him in jeans, I realize, but I don't stare too long. Our bodies are almost touching, boxed in by the chairs. I nod, thinking about what Warren just told me about the Darcys. How Darius is shady, and I'm sure his sister is the same. But why does this DC Darius seem nicer than the one back in Bushwick? He's smiling more, his eyes are softer, his whole body language is more laid back and chill. We've been wanting to get out of here to get some real food. Want to come with? He asks. Come with? No, thanks. I kind of want to see the other poets, I say. No, you don't. Trust me, you're 10 times better than they are, he says, grinning. Totally. I can only take a little bit of that spoken word stuff, Georgia says. But you were amazing. I only smile because I see Carrie rolling her eyes. She catches me watching her, then she flips her long straight hair over her shoulder. Thank you, I say to Georgia while keeping my eyes on Carrie. You still want those chili dogs, Darius? Georgia asks. Heck yeah, Darius says. He gently touches my arm. I'm sure you didn't get a chance to go to Ben's chili bowl, he says. You should really try it. It's good. And I laugh. Heck yeah, I repeat laughing. No one else is. Clearly they don't get how corny Darius sounds saying, heck yeah. You eat chili dogs? Let me guess, Darius says. You thought those hors d'oeuvres at our party are all we eat for dinner every night? I shake my head and try very hard not to laugh again. No, I didn't think that at all. Yes, you did, Zuri, he says. And do you eat those fried pork chunks for dinner every night? No, of course not, I say, and let out another laugh because he's right, and I was wrong. For the first time since meeting him, since hating him, I hear him laugh too. Georgia smiles while looking at her brother, then at me, then back at her brother. All the while, Carrie is dead serious. We leave Busboys and Poets and walk around the corner to a place called Ben's Chili Bowl. It looks like it's been there since forever, but the surrounding buildings have been scrubbed clean and polished. It's a short red and white building that has giant yellow signs with red lettering and pictures of a hot dog and a hamburger. Inside feels like my Brooklyn. The familiar black women behind the counter wearing hairnets, plastic gloves, and warm smiles. The smell of food feels like a big hug from Madrina, and the smooth R&B playing in the background makes everything seem as if it's swaying to the music. Whatever they serve here, both Papi and Mama would love this place. I imagine taking them here when they visit me on campus. I stand back against the wall while Darius orders for his sister, then Carrie, and then he turns to me. No thanks, I quickly say. You sure? Georgia asks. 'Cause nobody from New York turns down anything from Ben's Chili Bowl. I shake my head no, even though I'm hungry as hell. I don't want to hang out with them longer than I have to. After a few minutes of waiting for the food, small talk, and watching Carrie try to shut me out by making sure she gets in between me and Darius every chance she gets, we end up sitting in a booth in the back. I sit next to Georgia, while Carrie sits next to Darius, of course. I want to blurt out that I don't want her man, but it would be a waste of my breath at this point. My brothers told me that our new neighborhood is really loud. Good thing we have central air to keep out all that noise, Georgia says in between spoonfuls of her chili. It's not noisy, I say. As a matter of fact, if it gets too quiet, I won't be able to sleep. 'Cause you're used to it, right? Georgia asks. I just stare at her and don't say a word. Georgia's a smart girl because she immediately knows that she just tried to play me. I didn't mean to disrespect you, she says. Both Darius and Carrie are staring at me as if I'm about to pop off at the mouth or something. So I just say in my very best voice, the one I used to impress my teachers, I understand. Bushwick is an acquired taste. I'm surprised your family would want to move there. Carrie chuckles. Why are you suddenly talking like that? Talking like what? I ask. Darius, you notice how she just changed the way she talked, right?
No, Darius says, shaking his head and looking dead at me. He's biting into his second chili dog now, and somehow he eats that sloppy food like it's gourmet.
Zuri, you don't have to pretend to be someone you're not. Just be yourself. Admission counselors really like that. You know, keep it 100.
Carrie says, with that annoying high-pitched voice of hers. I raise both my eyebrows at this girl. Keep it 100?
Yeah, keep it real.
She takes a sip from her soda. I let it slide because this isn't Bushwick and I'm on vacation. Sort of. But still, I entertain her nonsense because I have a few minutes to kill before I have to get back to the station.
So Carrie, what are you doing in D.C.?
I ask, not because I want her to like me, but because it was her man who invited me over here and she's eyeing me like I'm the one checking for him.
Oh, just hanging out with Darius,
she says, cocking her head to the side and leaning against Darius a little bit. But he gently shoves her away. Well, I think that's my cue. It was nice running into all of you. See you back in Bushwick. I grab my bag and start to slide out of the booth.
Wait,
Darius says, as he finishes chewing his chili dog, wipes his mouth, then his hands, and looks up at me. My father's from around here. Well, Maryland. Carrie's grandparents live down here, too. My grandparents live in Chevy Chase, Darius says. We drove down to chill with Georgia for a few days. I was thinking of driving back up tonight. When are you heading back to Brooklyn? Carrie stares at him as if he's just broken some unspoken rule. Driving back? I say wide-eyed. By yourself?
Yeah, I'm 18, he says. I have my license and I've been driving since I was 16. Not in Brooklyn, though, Georgia adds. It's easier to learn in Martha's Vineyard.
Do your parents have a car, Zuri? Carrie butts in. This time, I cock my head to the side. She's a smart girl, too, because she reads my answer all over my face.
So that's how rich people get down? They let you drive on the highway between states when you're only 18?
Y'all are lucky. Both Darius and Georgia just stare at me with their matching tight jaws. Carrie is smirking.
It's not luck, it's necessity, Darius says. And practice for when I go to college next year. I have to drive myself to and from campus when I visit Bushwick. I'm applying to Georgetown.
Yeah, me too, in a few years, Georgia adds. Because Avi...
Yeah, Avi, I say while nodding slowly. You all are really from a different planet.
No, we're not, Darius says. In fact, now we're from the same block. I can drive you back to Brooklyn. I've done it plenty of times, but we should head out now before it gets too late, because I have to drop Georgia off and get my stuff. He doesn't wait to hear what I say. He doesn't even check in with Carrie, who's sitting there with her mouth open as if she can't believe what just went down. Darius is out of the booth already with his tray. He dumps his paper plate into the trash and starts heading out of the restaurant without looking back.
Wait a second, Carrie says, grabbing her purse and running after him. We're supposed to go back tomorrow. Why are you rushing, Dee?
Darius pauses at the door, a surprised look on his face. I thought you'd already booked a train ticket home. You complained about how carsick you were the whole way down.
I didn't actually buy it, Carrie says,
pushing past him and out onto the sidewalk. Georgia and I quickly follow.
Hold up, I interrupt. I didn't agree to drive home with you just yet.
Although if I do catch a ride home with Darius, Janae can get a refund for the bus ticket.
You know what? Forget it, Carrie says. I'll figure something else out.
She pulls out her phone and starts texting.
Whitney and Sam are going to Dodge City tonight anyway. I can hang with them.
Darius doesn't even try to stop her. Cool. Tell them I say hi, he says.
Tell them yourself,
Carrie replies, her voice icy cold.
I'm gonna get a cab.
She flips her hair again and shakes her little narrow behind as she walks away. I laugh under my breath. Darius steps closer to me, putting his hands in his jean pockets.
Zuri, really, I can take you home. I'm a good driver.
Don't listen to Carrie. His voice is low.
He really is,
Georgia chimes in. I look up at Darius, then down at my phone and see that I'm now running late for my bus. If I say no to Darius and then miss my ride, my parents will never let me out of the house again. I can say goodbye to Howard forever. I mean, I guess, I say slowly, but I get to DJ.
Deal, Darius says, and his smile is wider than I've ever seen it. My stomach drops, and I realize what I just agreed to. 4 hours alone, in a car, with Darius Darcy. What would Warren say to that? A cab pulls up to the curb and honks at Carrie. Georgia runs over to give Carrie a hug goodbye, and Darius waves politely to her. I'll text you, he calls out. Bye, Carrie, I shout. See you back in Brooklyn. I wave extra hard while grinning wide. We wait until Carrie is out of sight and then begin walking down U Street toward the car.
Are they going out? I ask Georgia quietly.
Carrie?
No way, she says. Then she calls out to Darius, who is a few steps ahead of us. Hey, bro, Zuri thought Carrie was your girlfriend.
Not in a million years, he says. And in that moment, something stirs deep in my belly. I'm not supposed to care, but part of me is relieved that Darius isn't into someone so shallow and insecure.
Is that a smile on your face?
Georgia asks, and I realize this girl's growing on me. I could see us being friends. Maybe.
Yeah, 'cause you're kinda cool, Georgia, I say. I can't wait for you to meet my sisters.
Oh my God, she squeals. I can't wait either. We'll have to hang out before I head back to boarding school.
Boarding school?
I ask, just as Darius holds open the shiny black front passenger door for me. It's a nice car, and it's not the one I usually see parked in front of their house back in Bushwick, but I don't ask any questions. For some reason, the polite gesture makes me nervous. Darius closes the door gently.
Yeah, Georgia says as she slides into the back seat. And now you get to meet my grandmother.
Wait, what? I say, turning to Darius as he gets into the driver's seat.
Yeah, did I forget to mention that?
Darius says and gives me a shy smile. He starts the car.
Your grandmother? Seriously?
Suddenly, I'm not sure this free ride is worth it. I need to call my parents and tell them about the change of plans, but maybe there's still time for Darius to drive me to the bus and I won't need to tell them anything.
She's harmless, I promise, Georgia says. I've been living with her all summer.
Really? I ask with a raised eyebrow. I check the time and see that it's already almost 7.
It's too late.
Yeah, harmless, Darius promises. That's what I'm worried about, I mumble. But I click my seatbelt closed. As we drive out to the DC suburbs, I'm still stuck on the fact that I'm sitting in the front seat of a car that belongs to a boy I can't stand. And we're headed to his grandmother's house of all places. Plus, he's driving me 200 miles back home. So I'm basically trusting Darius with my life right now. And an hour ago, I didn't even want to look at his face.
17.
The big houses here in Chevy Chase, Maryland, are pushed back away from the street, if you can even call it a street. It's more like a perfectly paved path to any and everywhere. There are no potholes, no bumps, no double parked cars, hardly any cars. Just wide open, smooth, curving road. And Darius drives as if he owns that path, as if this whole ride is his life, and things are just as easy for him as this road. I try not to let him see me checking out how he holds the steering wheel with one hand, how he leans back in his seat with all the confidence in the world, even though he's had his license for only 2 years. But he catches me looking at him, and I turn back to the car's window.
You like lobster, Zuri?
Georgia asks from the back seat. She's been asking me a billion questions about food, clothes, music, and places. Most of the things she brings up I've never heard of or experienced. So far, I know that they've gone skiing in somewhere called Aspen, go to somebody named Martha's Vineyard every summer, except for this one because of the move, and how they are still hoping to take a trip to some place called the Maldives. And I can tell Georgia is not showing off at anything. She seriously thinks I know what she's talking about when she brings up these places.
Sure,
I say. It's a lie. I've been to Red Lobster, but never had the lobster because it's the most expensive thing on the menu. And with 7 of us going out to eat for a graduation or a big birthday, no one is selfish enough to order lobster. I don't say this out loud, of course.
Darius loves lobster. That's why Grandma is making it special for him, she continues. And he has the nerve to eat 2 chili dogs before dinner. I swear he's her favorite, because I asked for vegetarian lasagna yesterday, and she was like, no. But Darius gets lobster. Not even Ainsley gets that kind of treatment.
Oh, so you're a grandma's boy, I ask, side-eyeing him.
Hardly. Georgia is exaggerating, Darius says as he pulls up to the biggest house I have ever seen. If the Darcy house is a mini-mansion, then this house is a straight-up castle. There are tall white columns at the front entrance, and the windows are so wide that they might as well be walls. I try hard not to look as if I've never seen nice things before. I blink and look away from the house, down at my hands, my jeans, my book bag on the floor, anything to not look so sheltered. The driveway curves around to the front of the house, and I keep it cool even as my phone keeps buzzing. It's 7:30, and my bus left half an hour ago. My parents want to make sure that I'm on the bus, and my sisters are asking for pictures, especially of the cute boys on the Howard campus. I should snap one of Darius and send it to them. I have no idea how to tell my family that I'm not on the bus, that I'm with Darius, in his car, about to step into his grandmother's ginormous house. I would never hear the end of it. Georgia jumps out of the car just as Darius shuts off the engine by pushing a button. He doesn't move from the front seat. I don't either. Are you sure you can get me home tonight? I ask.
I told you, he says, turning to me. I got you.
I shift away when he says this. Back home, when we say we've got somebody's back, we'll look out for them. But I got you is something else. It means that you're willing to fall back and know that the person will catch you. So I say, you don't know me like that.
What does that have to do with anything? He asks.
You said you got me. I don't know you well enough to trust you like that.
You do trust me to take you home, right?
Home is a 4-hour drive away. You just got your license, so I'm a little hesitant.
I didn't just get my license.
Okay, if you're still hesitant, I can drive the 40 minutes back to Union Station for you to catch your bus, he says, checking his phone. There'll be another one by 9 o'clock tonight, so you'll be good. I just wish you would have made up your mind earlier.
Hold up. You practically begged me to come here.
I did not beg you. I asked, and you said yes. So why are you changing your mind now? We're already here.
Fine, I say, and open the car's door to step out into the clean, crisp air. I quickly slam it shut, just as a woman steps out of the house.
Carrie, is that you? She says.
I freeze where I stand, partly because she thinks I'm Carrie, even though we look nothing alike, and partly because she doesn't look like anybody's grandma. This grandma walks toward the car wearing high heels, fitted dress pants, an apron, and hair so perfect that I'm sure it's a wig. And she almost looks younger than my own mother.
Grandma? This is, Darius starts to say as he comes out the car.
Oh, you're not Carrie,
his grandmother interrupts, stopping dead in her tracks and looking me up and down as if she's disappointed. So I introduce myself, extending my hand out to shake hers, but she doesn't take it and instead turns to Darius.
What happened to Carrie? I thought she was coming over for dinner.
She sounds like the newscasters on TV. Her words are perfect, her voice is just the right tone of bougie, and her smile looks plastic. She walks up to Darius and plants a kiss on his cheek. Darius steps back and looks away. His grandmother looks at me again. I smile big and bright so she knows that my mama raised me right, and I try again.
I'm Zuri. Zuri Benitez, I say.
She cocks her head to the side as if my name isn't enough for her. So I wait for Darius to make the introduction she needs to hear, but it's Georgia who comes to my rescue.
Zuri, this is our paternal grandmother, Miss Catherine Darcy. Grandma, she lives across the street from us in Bushwick.
And you dragged her all the way down here? She says with her mascaraed and eye-shadowed eyes wide open.
Dragged? I say out loud.
Actually, she was visiting Howard and I, Darius starts to say.
Howard?
Mrs. Darcy repeats.
Yes,
Howard, I say.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to intrude. Where can I catch the nearest bus back to Union Station?
Zuri, no, Darius says. Grandma, I invited Zuri because she lives right across the street from our new house. I'm going to go back tonight so I can give her a ride. We ran into her at Busboys and Poets.
Oh, is that place still open?
Mrs. Darcy asks, and she just turns back around and walks into her big house with her heels clicking against the concrete. If I thought the whole Darcy family was bougie, then this queen here is on a whole other level. I give Darius such a mean mug that he has to apologize with his whole body. He shrugs and gives me puppy eyes. But again, George is the first to actually say sorry.
Zuri, don't let our grandmother scare you. Once you get to know her, she's really nice.
And with that, I'm walking in front of Darius toward the other bigger Darcy mansion, through their fancy door and into what looks like a straight-up museum. I feel underdressed with my cheap sneakers and worn jeans. But still, as much money as they have, I decide that this grandmother of theirs is still shady. Money can't buy manners. I don't look around. I don't admire all the fancy art on the walls. I don't stare too long at the framed photos or the shiny wooden furniture. I don't even sit down on the giant leather couch that wraps around the whole living room, where a wide chandelier hangs from the middle of the ceiling. I pull my book bag up over my shoulder and keep a straight face.
So, you just wanted to show off how rich your family is?
I ask Darius as he stands across the room messing with his phone. I ignore mine, because I still have no idea what I'm going to tell my parents about not being on the bus by now. He chuckles, puts his phone back into his pocket, and looks up at me.
There's still time to get back to the bus station if you want. I don't want to keep you here against your will, Zuri Benitez.
Zuri. Just Zuri, Darius Darcy. I walk around the room, looking out the wide front windows at all the green grass and tall trees in this place. I sigh, tap my foot, stare at my nails, anything to show Darius that I'm not impressed. Then I say, I'm not some basic chick from the hood who thinks all that glitters is gold. I watch TV. I've seen fancy things before.
These are not fancy things, he says.
These are my grandparents' things, and my family has worked hard for them. I didn't bring you here to show off. I'm driving back to New York after dinner, and I wouldn't mind some company. In fact, I wouldn't mind your company. Before I can think of a comeback, his grandmother's heels come clicking down the long hallway.
Darius, aren't you going to help me set up?
She asks, before she even makes it into the living room, or whatever this giant room is called. I was just keeping Zuri company.
Oh, you can wait here in the parlor, How is it that you pronounce your name, darling?
Zuri. Zuri. She fixes her mouth as if she's bitten into a lemon.
Oh, that's nice. Darling, I'm gonna steal my grandson for a bit. The washroom is just down the hall.
I'm sorry, the what?
Washroom, she says. Then she shakes her head.
The bathroom. Wash your hands before dinner, sweetheart. She changes her voice with those last few words, as if she has a little bit of old-school hood hidden behind that hard face of hers. Then she says, Darius, and walks away. Darius motions for me to follow him out of the living room. I shake my head.
Come on, she's just being my grandmother, that's all, he says.
Not all grandmothers are that cold, I say.
She's not cold, she's just
getting to know you, that's all. You're my guest, so it's fine. And with that, I'm following him again into a kitchen so white and bright I have to blink a bunch of times just to be able to see straight. A long wooden table is next to the cabinets and shiny appliances. On it are white plates, wine glasses, white napkins, and sparkling silverware. Everything is set perfectly, looking like that farm-to-table restaurant Charlize works at. I almost want to take a picture of all this to send to her. She'd say all the wrong things. That I've hit the jackpot, that I need to get into this boy's pockets real quick, that I need to do something about that Carrie girl. But I just keep cool. Even after I see this washroom with two sinks and monogrammed towels, I stay in there for as long as I can, just staring at stuff and peeking into the cabinets. I don't even fix my messy fro in the mirror, splash some cool water on my face, or add any lip gloss until someone knocks.
I don't keep my makeup in there,
Georgia says when I finally open the door.
I could hook you up before you leave.
I'm good, is all I say before sitting down at the table. I stare down at a big red lobster on my plate, trying to figure out how to dig into it to get to the meat. As dinner begins, Mrs. Darcy goes on and on about her foundation, where she helps women and children from impoverished countries with something called microgrants. Darius has to help with another thing called a gala. Georgia talks about her internship with some senator, and then Mrs. Darcy asks me questions. I felt invisible before then.
Bushwick? I've lived there my whole life, and I intend to go back after college. It's the only home I know, and there's nowhere else in the world I'd rather be.
I say, as cool as a cucumber salad on my plate.
But Howard, it's a long way from Bushwick, and you sound like you've got a good head on your shoulders. Why not Harvard or Georgetown?
Darius will be applying this fall, Mrs. Darcy says. She's seated at the end of the table with Georgia on one side of her and Darius next to her. I'm sitting next to Georgia, but the table is so long that there might as well be two people sitting in between us.
Well, I'd like to go to Howard because of its cultural legacy as a historically black college. I'm going to learn everything I can, and then I'm going back to my hood to help my people out.
I leave the lobster alone and eat the linguine. I don't care how clumsy I look rolling the pasta onto my fork, because Mrs. Darcy doesn't seem to care about how disrespectful she's being to me.
I'm sorry. Did you say your hood? So it is a little, how do I say, underdeveloped?
Darius, I told your father to wait a few years, at least until Georgia is in college, to buy a house over there.
You don't fit in. None of you do.
Your parents did not raise you that way. I'm sure it's a culture clash for you, Darius. But my ambitious son wants to be a real estate pioneer. I can't believe he's putting my dear grandchildren through all of that. I pay attention to how she holds her fork with her pinky up, how she sips her wine, how she pats the side of her lips with the white napkin, and even how she looks down her nose at me. I glance at Darius, who is shaking his head a little. He's not looking up at me at all. He doesn't say a word to come to my defense. And Georgia is too busy with her lobster to get a word in. So like the girl from the hood that I am, I stick up for myself. Bushwick is a very nice place to grow up, Mrs. Darcy. We have block parties, we hang out on stoops together, and we look out for each other. And Georgia, me and my sisters will look out for you when you come, just like I look out for Darius now.
With that, he finally looks up, and I squint my eyes at him.
Oh, Mrs. Darcy says and laughs a little while putting her fork down.
Is that why he brought you here? So you could look out for him?
Grandma, Darius says. Mrs. Darcy turns her whole body to Darius now and asks,
how did Carrie get home? I thought you two were hanging out in D.C. today. I was expecting her, and this is what you bring to my door instead.
Excuse you? I say.
Mrs. Darcy, I didn't ask to come here. I'm supposed to be on a bus heading home right now, but your grandson invited me, so I will gladly invite myself out. Now, can someone please get me a cab?
I stand from my seat, grab my bag from the floor, and start to make my way out of that kitchen.
Oh, you will not talk to me like that in my own home, young lady, Mrs. Darcy says. And you will not talk to me like that to my face.
Grandma, Darius says through clenched teeth, and that's all he says. But I don't pay him any mind. I keep walking toward the living room even as he comes chasing after me.
I'm sorry, Zuri, he says. Let me grab my things.
I open the front door and wait outside. I keep my arms crossed as my breaths get shorter, my heart races, and I feel like running back in there to curse that woman out one last time.
Georgia comes outside, and I look away from her.
I'm sorry about that, Zuri.
You're cool, Georgia, but your family is bougie as hell, I say.
Please don't judge my family like that, another voice says. I turn toward the door to see Darius holding a small leather suitcase.
You wouldn't want me to call your whole family ghetto, now would you?
Georgia's mouth falls open. Darius and I just stare at each other for a long second until his grandmother comes prancing to the door. That's my cue to keep walking away from that house.
Darius, honey? It's getting dark. You should stay over and go home in the morning.
I have to take Zuri home, he says.
Well, you can take her back to Howard, she continues.
I'll call you when I'm on the road, Grandma. Darius comes around to the passenger side of the car to open the door for me. This whole thing was a mistake, I say, as Darius gets into the car. Please take me back to the bus station and listen to your grandmother. You shouldn't drive all the way back to New York in the dark. I've done it before, and you shouldn't be on the bus by yourself. I'll be fine. Okay. That's when I text my parents and finally tell them that I'll be catching a later bus home. Their responses are going to come flying through my phone, so I tuck it into my bag. I don't want to have to explain one more thing to them right now. Darius starts the car as his grandmother stands in front of her house with her arms crossed. Georgia is waving to me frantically. I wave back. Your sister is cute, I say, just to let him know that there's at least one person in his family I like. Yeah, a little too cute and a little too naive, Darius says. He backs out of the driveway and has to put his arm around my seat and turn his body toward me to do so. He leans in a little bit too much, and part of me thinks it's on purpose. When he's out of the driveway, he says, oh, sorry. Then he sighs as he drives away from his grandmother's house. Thank you, he says. For what? I say. For calling out my grandmother on her bullshit. I didn't mean to disrespect her. It's just that, I know, you held your own. I don't say anything to that. I just sit back in my seat, letting this strange day wrap around me like new clothes. It's familiar, but different, and makes me feel brand new. 18. What do you like to listen to? Darius finally asks after 10 minutes of driving in silence down a highway. You said you DJ, remember? Trap, I lie. Hood shit, ratchet lyrics with the loudest bass. Okay, he says. You'll have to be a little bit more specific. See, you should already know what I'm talking about when I say trap music. It should already be on your playlist. Now, what do you like to listen to? I ask. Why don't you take a guess, since you already know me so well and what I should be listening to? No, I don't like to play mind games. Really, you could have fooled me. What's that supposed to mean? According to you, I should be doing all these things that'll make me more, what, black? Did you write a manual or something? Yes, I did. It's called Boys in the Hood. Ha ha, very funny, Miss Benitez. Ain't nobody laughing, Mr. Darcy. So seriously, you don't got no trap music? I ask, trying to figure out the buttons on his dashboard. You mean, do I have any trap music? He says this slowly, enunciating every word. Hold up. Are you correcting me? Yes. I don't have any words for him. I just stare at the side of his face, and if he wasn't driving at 65 miles per hour down a highway right now, I'd mush him so hard it would make him rethink his whole life. But it's too quiet, so I reach out for the radio at the same time he does, and our hands touch. I start to pull back, but he holds my hand for a moment as he stares out at the road. I slowly pull away. I need you to drive with both hands, Darius, I say, as I notice the sign for Baltimore. Wait, weren't you supposed to take me back to D.C.? He sighs. Sorry, I wasn't thinking. I was so ready to head back to Brooklyn that I just hopped on 95. We can go back, or you can catch a bus in Silver Spring. We're not too far from there. I laugh a little. You're trying to kidnap me? He doesn't laugh. I would never do something like that. He's dead serious. Dang. Relax, Darius. I'm just joking. I can't wait to get back to Brooklyn either, so I'll ride with you. I want to take those last few words back in case he reads too deep into them, but he doesn't respond. I text my parents that there was a change of plans, that Darius is giving me a ride home. Mama doesn't even ask how or why or what. She just texts back a million heart emojis. I roll my eyes and shove my phone to the bottom of my bag. After a long, quiet minute, Darius says quietly, you're probably hungry, since you barely ate any dinner. We can stop somewhere to get something to eat. My first instinct is to say no, but I don't. My stomach twists. Sure, I say. I let the quiet swell between us for a moment. He never puts on any music and doesn't say another word. Neither do I. But the time is moving slowly, even though the car is zooming past miles and miles of trees and road. I sink into my leather seat and watch Darius because he can't watch me. He's more comfortable driving a car than I expected, using his turn signal to switch lanes and keeping his hands firmly on the steering wheel. Everything about him looks confident. He knows who he is. He knows this road. He knows this world. His skin looks extra smooth in the dim light of the setting sun. His face and whole body are relaxed, so I let my guard down a little bit. He glances at me for a quick second and shoots me a smile. This time, I don't look away. I keep watching him. Even though there's still some weird vibes between us, I feel safe. Darius's ringing phone breaks the silence. "Hey, Mom," he says, as if he's talking to one of his friends. "Darius?" His mother's voice is like music coming through the car's speakers. She almost sings, "Are you with that young lady from across the street?" "Zuri?" "Yeah." If my stomach was twisting before, then now it's a straight-up tornado. "Well, her parents came to our door saying that she was with you. I assured them that you've made this trip several times and that she's in good hands. And I see you're on your way back to New York. Drive safe, honey." She hangs up before Darius explains anything, and I exhale a bit knowing that his parents are tracking his phone. He takes an exit off the highway, and I tense up because he's going a little too fast when he makes a sharp turn onto another road. I dig out my phone and see that I have a new text from Warren and a ton from my sisters. I have no idea what to say to any of them right now. How could I possibly explain to Warren that I'm in the car with Darius? We pull into the parking lot, and the lights of the rest stop flicker on in the gathering darkness. I open the door and get out of the car. Crickets chirp, and the air is gentle. The hum of cars driving past is almost comforting. I know that we're near the highway, but this almost feels like the countryside or something, like I've been transported to a place I've only seen in movies. We walk side by side and get hit by a blast of air conditioning when we step into the rest stop. Darius turns to me, concern etched between his thick eyebrows. "Wait, what do you like to eat?" I look around at the fast food options and walk ahead of him to a chicken spot. He follows. At the counter, I order the largest meal I can buy with my $14. Darius orders fries and a club soda. While we're waiting, I realize that he's standing way too close behind me. "Yo, ease up, bruh," I say with a smile on my face. "I'm sorry," he says. "I thought you were cold. They're blasting the AC in here." "Yeah, right, Darius," I say, bumping my body against his. And he's right because it's hella cold in this fast food restaurant, and I notice the goosebumps on my bare arms. "I can keep you warm while we wait," Darius offers innocently. "What? No, I'm good, really." I shake my head and turn away so he doesn't see me smile. Then I say, "I can keep you warm." He hugs himself, rubs his arms, and goes, "Brrr." I laugh. "Oh my goodness, you are so stupid." "Well," he says, holding out his arms, "I'm still cold." I roll my eyes and shake my head just as they call our number for our order. "That's all you're getting?" I ask. "I just ate, and you barely touched your lobster." "I'm not into lobster, and your grandmother spoiled my appetite." "Zuri, I'm sorry about my grandmother," he apologizes again. "She can be a little uptight." I just harumph. I don't want to get into it again, and no amount of apologizing can fix that woman anyway. The cashier girl places our bags of food on the counter, and I reach into my pocket for my money. But Darius touches my arm, and he already has a card in his hand to pay for the food. "I can pay for myself," I say. "I knew you were going to say that, but really, it's my treat." "Well, all right, then." I can't help but give him a sliver of a smile as I let him pay. I'm back at the car waiting for him to unlock the doors when I notice that he isn't behind me. He's sitting near a set of benches and tables in front of the restaurant. I didn't realize we were turning this into a full-on picnic. I pause for a little bit to watch him open up the bags and pull out his food. He eats fries as if they're the most expensive thing in the world. He catches me looking at him and motions for me to come over. For the first time during this whole trip, I'm able to sit back and take in the wide blue-orange sky and warm summer air. There are no tall buildings around, or sirens, or loud music and voices. just the soothing sound of speeding cars in the distance. And Darius's brown eyes with those thick eyelashes staring at me. "Yes?" I ask as I dig into my two-piece meal. I don't feel any kind of way about eating fried chicken and fries in front of this boy, even as he refuses to look away. "Nothing," he says, trying to hold in a laugh. "You played yourself by only getting fries. You know you want some of this," I say with a mouthful of chicken. "No, thank you. I'm just amazed." "You ain't never seen a girl eat fried chicken before?" I lick my fingers and take a sip of soda. "No, not like that." "Of course not. I bet Carrie eats fried chicken with a knife and fork. Oh, wait, she's probably vegan." "As a matter of fact, she claims to be." "Figures." "Why are you using her as a gauge? You're completely different, Zuri." With that, he leaves me speechless for a hot minute. I finish my food, take a few more sips, and wipe my mouth. I know I'm different. That was my point. "You're more than different. You're special, Zuri. I mean, damn, I've never met a girl like you." He looks down when he says this, as if he's been practicing or something, and he didn't know how I'd react. I don't know what to say to that, even as my whole body tingles with tiny granules of sugar, as Madrina says. So I get up, wipe my mouth and hands with a napkin, toss the rest of my food into a nearby trash bin, and start heading back to his car. We should hurry up. It's getting dark. I'm almost near the car when I realize that he's not following me again. I turn around to see him standing a few feet away, just staring at me. "Okay, you're creeping me out. For the record, my father knows I'm with you, he knows where your parents live, and he owns a machete," I say. He smiles in a way I've never seen him smile before. I only shake my head and wait for him to open the car with his remote control key thing. But instead, he walks around to my side and is coming closer to me. I don't step back. I just stand there as he inches closer and closer, and before I know it, we're face to face. Still, I don't step back. Slowly, he leans in, breathing heavy, looking into my eyes, and his lips touch mine. He pauses, as if making sure it's okay, and that's when I finish what he started. I fall into his kiss, making sure that I'm still in the lead, that I'm still in control, and he slips his hands around my waist and pulls me in. I pull him in even closer. We feel like one body. And in that moment, I can't believe this is happening. This kiss, this hold, never crossed my mind as something that would be real. I hated him. I hated everything about him. But this isn't hate. Finally, he pulls away, but he looks into my eyes and raises his eyebrows as if asking me if I'm okay. I smile a little. He kisses me on the cheek before we make it back to the car. He opens the door for me, and I silently slide into the seat. I reach over to open the door for him. "Thank you," he mouths. And every second of this moment is slowed down like dripping honey. My stomach is in knots when we make our way back to the city. I push on the radio to fill the quiet, to hush my own spinning thoughts. Slowly, Darius inches his hand across the armrest and weaves his fingers through mine. And I don't let go, even as my insides turn into gooey, sticky sweetness. Haikus. I am that tall glass of lemonade where sugar sits at the bottom, never rising to the top. Sweet and sour don't mix to quench this thirst, wrapping around my throat where a bittersweet song is lodged. You serenade me while I sip this honey lemonade potion. You are a love brew. Damn, boy, you got me thirsty over you. Mouth dry, lips chapped, I'm dreaming of quenching waters and all I want to do is swim deep in this thing called lemonade where bittersweet elixirs soothe the soul like moist lips. Touching, bodies merged in this dance while sugar stirs to the top, whirling, like Ochung in her yellow dress, swirling to the drums, making all this sharp-tongued bitterness submit to the queen bee called my heart. You got me thirsty. 19. There's something happening to my body, but this isn't love. It was just a kiss. Wasn't it? I sit back in the car, feeling free. Darius is in full control, and I'm okay with it for now. We're easing toward New Jersey with music I've never heard before blasting in the car. Darius bops his head, sings some of the lyrics, licks his lips a few times, and glances at me plenty of times. I start to smile. My lips are a half moon, but my whole body is smiling too. We're almost at the toll booths and the traffic comes to a crawl. Darius turns down the music and asks if I'm feeling okay. I nod.
Are you feeling better than you did earlier?
He asks again.
What do you mean by better?
I ask. Well, I know you weren't feeling my grandmother or her house or me.
Oh, so you want to know if I'm feeling better about you?
He laughs. Touché, Miss Benitez. So how do you feel about me? I laugh too.
You don't waste any time, I see.
I've already wasted too much time, he says, easing the car up close behind the one ahead of us.
What do you mean by that?
I look directly at him this time because I want a direct answer.
I should have kissed you a long time ago.
No, you should not have. I would have hated you even more.
Oh, really? Hate is a strong word, and it's also a strong emotion.
Emotions are feelings, and feelings change. Is it safe to say that you don't hate me anymore? He's now driving